You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Friday, February 20th, 2015, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thank you for joining us here, and welcome to the weekend. We finally made it. And boy, it's hard to believe that we're almost all the way through February of 2015 already. Amazing how time flies when you legalize. All sorts of stuff to bring to you today. Our final day of coverage from the International Cannabis Business Conference that took place last weekend in San Francisco, California. On the show today, one of my favorite pieces of video. We have got Steve D'Angelo from Harborside Health Center. He sat down for a one-on-one interview with Steve Bloom on stage at the Cannabis Business Conference. And I happened to catch him just as Steve Bloom was asking D'Angelo about his controversial comments on the Bill O'Reilly Show and other cable outlets around the time he was doing the Weed Wars show about how he did not support recreational marijuana legalization. It was pretty interesting to see that finally get addressed in a public forum. We've got Steve D'Angelo's answer for you coming up at half past. Also on the show, D'Angelo was gracious enough to sit down with me for an extended interview. We talked about Melinda Haig and her attacks upon Harborside and how he is dealing with that and other issues at America's largest marijuana dispensary. So stay tuned. Plenty from Steve D'Angelo coming up on this show. And then right after that, we've got a sit-down interview with Rick Steves, who had given the keynote presentation on Monday. Rick sat down and we discussed how Europe is reacting to American legalization and other topics having to do with his great expertise on European travel. Also on the show today, we have got a couple of shorter pieces from the ICBC. David Lampack from the ICBC will be here. He's one of the co-founders of Steep Hill Labs, and he'll talk to us a little bit about that industry. And then Rick Frommer, a dispensary owner, will talk about his experiences all from the International Cannabis Business Conference. But of course, we also have the 420 radio news we have to get to in the headlines today. We have two new bills at the federal level to hasten the end of marijuana prohibition in America. We've got good news in the Kettle Falls 5 case, although it's a little bit bittersweet. We'll tell you about Judge Rice's dismissal of charges against one of the Kettle Falls 5. The Marijuana Policy Project is calling for a boycott of the Holiday Inn hotel brand. You can sign that boycott at rad-r.us/holidayout. And you have to capitalize the H and the O, holiday out, at the rad-r.us short link. And we've also got a story on Responsible Ohio. They've made an amendment to their plan to legalize marijuana in the state. And in Hawaii, they're attempting to get marijuana decriminalization passed. There was some testimony this Wednesday before the Senate Health Committee. We'll talk about the progress of the Hawaiian decriminalization bill. And then we'll take things into hour two. And in Toker Talk Radio, a few topics to bring up, including the possibility of a pot shop-related sitcom coming to NBC entitled Buds. Of course, Jane Fonda talks about smoking weed and having sex at 77 years old. It's good news for those of us who are getting older that things are still good after 70. Also, speaking of after 70, we're going to make a little tribute to one of our favorite activists in the world, Mrs. Ann Lee out of Texas. And one of our least favorite politicos, Debbie Wasserman Schultz in Florida, is facing the wrath of the medical marijuana community. All that coming up in the next 2 hours on The Russ Belville Show. Thanks for being here.
You're tuned into The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio, your ticket to the High Times Cannabis Cups. Oregon has joined Washington and Colorado in legalizing marijuana. We're Portland Normal, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws chapter in Portland, Oregon. Join us as we celebrate the launch of an exciting new era in marijuana freedom in Oregon. Our job has just begun. Powerful interests want to white out the most important portions of Oregon's legalization law. By joining Portland Normal, you add your voice to the thousands who voted for Measure 91 and want it to be implemented as written. The people have spoken. Now it is time for the legislature to obey the will of the people. Find out more about Portland Normal at portlandnormal.org. Attend our monthly membership meetings on the fourth Saturday of the month. See our website for more details. Portland Normal, ensuring responsible adult marijuana consumers are afforded the same rights, privileges, and responsibilities as beer drinkers.
I like it.
Well, I don't know what you can do, but what we can keep the funk alive.
That's right, baby. We're keeping the funk alive right here at Big Daddy Fink's Funky Roller Rink, your groovy home of soul, funk, and disco. So join me, Big Daddy, every Thursday night, 11 Eastern, 8 Pacific, at the Funky Roller Rink, where every night is Saturday night.
This is Radical Russ encouraging you to take a look at the Weed Blog every day. Johnny Green and the staff at the Weed Blog are on top of all the latest developments in the fight to end marijuana prohibition nationwide. You can even get the Weed Blog on your smartphone by installing the Weed Blog app for iPhone and Android. If it's about weed, it's on the Weed Blog, including my original writing. So don't delay. Read the Weed Blog today. It's time for the 420 Radio News, covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Transcripts of 420 Radio News are available daily on our website at 420radio.org. Now, here's Russ Melville with your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds. This is your 420 Radio News for Friday, February 20th, 2015. U.S. Representative Earl Blumenauer of Oregon and U.S. Representative Jared Polis of Colorado have introduced two bills that will hasten the end of federal prohibition of marijuana. Representative Polis has introduced H.R. 1013, the Regulate Marijuana Like Alcohol Act. This legislation would remove marijuana from the schedule set by the Controlled Substances Act, transition marijuana overnight from the jurisdiction of the Drug Enforcement Agency to the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, and regulate marijuana like alcohol by inserting into the section of the U.S. Code that governs intoxicating liquors. Representative Blumenauer has introduced H.R. 1014, the Marijuana Tax Revenue Act of 2015. This legislation would impose a 10% federal excise tax on the sale of marijuana for non-medical purposes, rising to 25% as the legal market displaces illegal sellers. Medical marijuana sales would be exempt from the tax. On Wednesday, U.S. District Court Judge Thomas O. Rice dismissed multiple federal marijuana charges against 71-year-old Larry Harvey, patriarch of the Kettle Falls Five, because of his deteriorating health brought on by stage 4 cancer of the pancreas, which has begun to spread to his liver. But Harvey's reprieve remains bittersweet. His family members, who were charged along with him, still collectively face the possibility of decades in prison. Quote, "My wife, Rhonda, is my sole caregiver," Harvey said Thursday. "If Rhonda goes to prison, I don't know who will take care of me. I will probably have to leave our home for good and move into a nursing facility," end quote. The federal spending bill prohibits the Department of Justice from using funds to go after state legal medical marijuana programs, but Judge Rice held that the spending prohibition did not apply to this case. The Kettle Falls 5 trial is slated to begin next week. Marijuana Policy Project urged a boycott of the Holiday Inn hotel brand after New Vision Hotels 2, LLC, filed a lawsuit claiming that they have already lost business at their Holiday Inn location in Frisco, Colorado, due to marijuana legalization. The suit argues that under the U.S. Constitution's Supremacy Clause, which states that federal law generally takes precedence over state law, Colorado's regulation of recreational marijuana is unconstitutional because marijuana remains illegal at the federal level. On Friday morning, MPP called for the boycott in an email newsletter sent to about 200,000 subscribers, as well as on its Facebook and Twitter pages. MPP also launched a change.org petition calling on New Vision Hotels 2 to withdraw its lawsuit and urged Holiday Inn's parent company, Intercontinental Hotels Group, to support a withdrawal of the suit. At the time of this show, the petition had already received over 6,000 signatures. The group wanting to legalize marijuana in Ohio, but to limit growing to 10 regulated commercial sites, released a revised plan Wednesday that would allow Ohioans to grow smaller amounts at home. Responsible Ohio wants to legalize marijuana for medical use and for personal use for adults over age 21. The group's plan would limit growing to 10 commercial sites promised to campaign backers, allowing adults over age 21 to apply for licenses to manufacture marijuana edibles and other items and own retail stores. The revised amendment allows adults over age 21 to own up to 4 flowering plants and possess up to 8 ounces of dried marijuana for personal use, as long as they first obtain a home grower's license from a yet-to-be-created commission. A license would cost $50, but all other requirements would be left up to the commission to decide. Supporters of a bill to decriminalize marijuana in Hawaii took turns testifying before the Senate Health Committee Wednesday. Under Hawaii Senate Bill 596, getting caught with an ounce or less of pakalolo, the Hawaiian word for marijuana, would result in a fine of up to $100, a civil infraction instead of a petty misdemeanor. Pamela Lichty pointed to her testimony as to how the laws in 19 other states, plus cities and counties, that have decriminalized marijuana have not affected use among either youths or adults, and how polls in Hawaii support it. She's the president of the Drug Policy Action Group. But law enforcement, Catholic groups, and anti-drug advocates told the committee that marijuana is a dangerous habit-forming drug. The committee passed the bill after making some amendments. This has been your 420 Radio News for Friday, February 20th, 2015. I'm Russ Belville. Radio, turning red states and blue states green. 420 Radio, tune in, turn on, get high, educated.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 1920s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
Welcome back, everyone. We've got more highlights from the International Cannabis Business Conference. This is David Lampack. Welcome back to the International Cannabis Business Conference in San Francisco, California. I'm sitting here with David Lampack. He's the founder and chief executive officer of Steep Hill Labs, the first cannabis testing lab, I understand. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Fantastic. Thank you for being here.
Sure.
I'm really excited to talk to you because I'm from the state of Oregon, Portland, Oregon. We just passed marijuana legalization. And I've been following the industry and the development of legalization throughout the states, and I found a very interesting phenomenon in Colorado and in Washington State. The laws for the testing and labeling of recreational marijuana are far more stringent than those for medical.
Right.
What's your opinion on that, and what is Steep Hill doing to try to lobby legislatures on how this testing should roll out in legal states?
Right. Well, my opinion on that is that it's absurd.
Yeah.
Obviously, medical cannabis should at least be as safe, if not safer, than recreational cannabis. The reason that happened was because the medical cannabis legalization that occurred first in these states, and those were by referendum, and those referendums didn't require testing. And so when that developed, there was no, initiative to have quality assurance testing. They learned from that experience and then passed recreational and decided to test, which is the sensible way to go. But because of the way referendums work, you can't just go back and change, you know, the will of the people, essentially.
Like a do-over kind of thing.
Yeah.
Another issue that I've reported on in the past, and this one came out of Colorado, was, I want to call it a sting operation, but investigations by local news there that found tested and labeled particularly edibles were not living up to what was on the label. Things that were labeled 100 milligrams was coming in anywhere from 5 to 160.
So Steve Hill did that testing. Okay. It was for the Denver Post in Colorado. And we also did a similar test for CBS News in the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. Same exact results. I don't know why producers and processors of edibles would ever put, you know, 100 milligrams on a label. There were some that were coming up at 0.5 milligrams of THC.
Yeah, I remember that
company. That. Fortunately, is now out of business.
Good.
But you know, there were a lot of, you know, misses by lesser factors. But the fact is that you do the testing, you can get it dead on every time. And we have clients who do that over and over and over again, and those guys get it right. So it's
not impossible to do. You can make 100 milligram chocolate bar that's always 100 milligrams.
That happens in every food industry in the country.
So what's to explain the wildly disparate numbers some of these people were getting? Just lack of understanding how to...
I think in some cases it's a genuine just sort of lack of awareness, and, you know, it was sort of an honest mistake. But in others, it's really just fraud. So, you know, I think greed is probably, you know, a pretty strong explanation as to why that happens.
Of course, other things that have to be tested for: mold, mildew, contaminants, pesticides. Are there any areas in testing that are new frontiers that we hadn't thought about previously?
Yes, absolutely. We just came out with a product called GenKit, which is a DNA-based diagnostic that tests for the sex of the cannabis plants. Oh. So it's not safety-related, but it's good for especially outdoor growers. They can, you know, put their plants to seed, and then right when they come up, they can test the leaf material and know if it's a female or a male. Then it reduces raw materials, time, you know, resources, things like that go into growing twice as many plants to arrive at a number half as large, because 50% are male, and males will pollinate the plants and make them essentially worthless.
Now, the other issue that I have as a consumer, I'm originally from Idaho, and I always like to joke, we had two strains there, got some and don't. But now we have, as consumers, much greater selection, much greater diversity of product. Yet, the Super Silver Haze I buy at one place sometimes doesn't seem like the Super Silver Haze I bought at another place. Is there any sort of way, genomically perhaps, that we're standardizing this?
Yeah, there's actually two ways we do that at Steep Hill. One is DNA testing, essentially, where we actually look at the DNA, and then you can say this is Super Silver Haze, as long as you have a solid reference for the strain that you want to test for. And the other way is just to look at it chemically. And cannabis is so diverse that there will be, you know, very different cannabinoid profiles from strain to strain, very different terpenoid profiles from strain to strain. So you can tell a lot just by looking at the chemical profile of the plant. You can, in many cases, say this is absolutely not something. In some cases, it's a lot harder to say this is definitely something, specific strain, by doing it that way. But the combination of those two is a deadlock. So
I know in Colorado there was a weird MED rule about not being able to get your own cannabis tested if you were home growing it. Is that something you're working to change? And is there perhaps around the corner home testing kits or some sort of way we can get that to the consumer level?
Yeah, we're actually working on stuff like that at Steep Hill. I'm not sure when Colorado is going to change that. It absolutely does not make sense. They're the only state that regulates cannabis in the country where the law is that way.
And so you have Steep Hill is available in all the legal and medical states at this point?
We have a lab in Berkeley, California. Okay. So we're in California. We are in Seattle, Washington, Denver, Colorado. We're opening in Las Vegas, Nevada, and soon to open in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and also Portland, Oregon.
There we go. We wanted to hear Portland, Oregon in that list. Fantastic.
Yep.
David Lompoc is the Chief Executive Officer and founder of Steep Hill Labs. You can learn more at steephilllab.com. And any other information to get out to the people that want to contact you or learn more about the issue?
check out our website, get active, make sure that cannabis regulation gets, sensibly put in place in your local jurisdiction, and, let's make sure we educate patients and consumers as to what they're consuming, because they have that right to know.
I hear you. Thank you so much, David, for joining us here at the desk.
Appreciate it.
Also, need to add on to that, a little bit of a misintroduction. Addison DeMuro is the co-founder of Steep Hill with Mr. Lampak. So I wanted to make sure that that was clear in this presentation.
The Nile ain't just a river in Egypt.
All right, folks, it's 4:20 in the Mountain Time Zone, Denver, Colorado. Get your smoke on. Thank everybody listening in whatever time zone you happen to be in. Or if you're listening on the podcast, all these time updates must be a little weird for you, right? Unless you start it right at the top of the hour, huh? We're back with Rick Frommer right after this.
Radio, the world's voice of marijuana legalization. Get .buzz. .buzz is the internet platform that fuels community interest, excitement, and new experiences. .buzz is the premier online destination for internet users seeking the latest news on a variety of topics. .buzz appeals to groups active in blogging, communications, journalism, advertising, and marketing. .buzz offers registrants a stronger alternative to the shrinking namespace of existing top-level domain names, such as .com, .net, and .org. Get your name now at get.buzz. Are you in the market for portable vaporizers now? Get online to vapes.buzz, the quick and easy link to portablevaporizersnow.com. Vapes.buzz has everything you are looking for, including vape pens, herbal vaporizers, e-juice, parts, accessories, and more. Visit vapes.buzz and use promo code 420RADIO to get 10% off your online purchase, or just give them a call at 866-264-2415. Vapes.buzz. Get vaping, baby! Arguing for the end of adult marijuana prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It is even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more in this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
More highlights from the International Cannabis Business Conference. This is dispensary owner Rick Frommer.
Are you Dave? Are the mics on, by the way? Some people down there? Okay. Dave, so we're doing the SWOT analysis. We'll start with strengths. Just a question about the dispensary industry. What do you think is the biggest strength that we have as an industry together?
I think the biggest strength is right now we get to create and decide how it's going to move forward. We don't have to sit and buy and be bystanders. We actually have the ability. We're the ones in contact with the people. We're the ones who get the signatures on the ballots. If that's what we need to do to change the rules and regulations, I think the biggest strength is that we can get the people behind us.
That's amazing. Thank you. Our next speaker, Rick Frommer. Do you want to come up, Rick?
Sure.
Rick is with Harborside Health Center. He's done a heck of a lot for the movement. He's kind of one of the unsung heroes that maybe you don't hear about all the time, but he's been laboring nonstop for all of us for, getting on 30 years almost. Oh, my God. Take it away. I'm sorry.
That's going to make me all of us older and older. From pot to SWOT, 3 years ago, I had no idea what SWOT analysis was, other than maybe trying to get rid of a fly or something, and we started doing it at Harborside and started looking at our strengths and weaknesses and opportunities and threats, and we continue to do that to this day, and they're an essential part of, as Debbie was saying, the process of really honestly analyzing your business, as it increasingly is becoming a real mainstream business. I think one of the things that makes California different, the dispensary scene different in California than anywhere else is, well, for one, we've been doing this for close to 20 years already. Even though we don't have statewide regulations, some of our local civic regulations are amongst the best in the nation and are certainly less burdensome than the supposedly legal situations that we see in some other states. One of the most important things I see in the dispensary world in California coming up is, how we maintain our heart and soul. And before that 20 years, we were doing it legally here in California. We were doing it for another 20 years underground. So California, unlike any other place, has got close to a 40-year infrastructure of cannabis production, consumption, distribution, et cetera, et cetera. There's thousands of heritage farmers from up and down the state who are multi-generational at this point, whose entire livelihood, as well as the livelihood of all those small towns that they live in, completely depends on cannabis. So I think one of the big challenges for the dispensaries is, you know, how do we continue to form partnerships with these people? How do we represent them in the legislative process that's happening as we talk in Sacramento? How do they get represented during the initiative process? It's very easy to talk about coming in as they did in other states, and I really don't need to pick on. I have infinite respect for Colorado and Washington for being first. Should have been us, but they beat us to the punch. But you know, building 600, 800 like grows and using that kind of electrical draw in order to provide cannabis when you have abundant sunshine. Unfortunately, Colorado, you are seeing shifting to greenhouse production finally to some extent, but there's still literally, you know, multi-hundred lighters being set up there on a basis. They also wrote their law to limit outside investment, to not make anybody from another state a principal. Basically meaning they were allowed to build up a monopoly over the last couple of years. And those folks are strongly moving into California at this point. There's deals on the table that they're doing. There's other ones being talked about. And certainly, you know, this is America. We all have a right to do business and to do the things. But we've already built a really good model for dispensaries here. It wasn't in California that you heard about people overdosing on edibles or edibles being mislabeled. You don't hear a lot of, you know, we've certainly had some issues with BHO hash production. And so in a more regulated model, that can also be safely produced. But, you know, I see the biggest threat, if we're doing the SWOT analysis at this point, of the medical cannabis industry in California is, you know, how do we maintain that heart and soul? There's a fantastic documentary that I just got to see the other day. It was about Dennis Barone's first. Everybody put their hands up in the audience and knows who Dennis Barone is. That's pretty good. It should have been every hand in the room, but that's pretty good. There's a piece that this guy did about 10 years ago called The First U.S. Pot Club. That's all about Dennis Barone's Market Street Club. That for any of you that had a chance to experience it, was a beautiful moment in time. They had two different flavors.
You can get 420 Radio on the go with our Shoutcast stream for all internet-enabled media players. Go to rad-r.us/420shout or just click the Shoutcast icon below the live radio feed at 420radio.org. Growing plants indoors can be a rewarding hobby, but electricity bills can go through the roof. Then you have to cool down all those big hot lights. It can drive a grower insane. With Lush LED lighting, you can solve many of these issues and double your rewards. Matt and his scientists have developed the perfect light for flowering plants with far less cost and heat. And the results? Very effective. Check out LushLEDLighting.com right now and tell them Radical Russ sent you. The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, treat law enforcement with respect and stand up for your rights by repeating, "I respectfully invoke all of my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak with my attorney." Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at omarfigueroa.com. The cannabis community is a diverse set of people from all walks of life, conservative and liberal, black and white, straight and gay, rich and poor, and everyone in between. Learn more about the people we are freeing from adult marijuana prohibition in our Cannabis Community Chat.
And now Steve Bloom with Steve D'Angelo from ICBC.
For wellness and not really liking the use of the term recreational for marijuana. So I want to open up the discussion to that and let you explain a little bit more about your theory around wellness and maybe why you don't like the term recreational.
Yeah,
sure. The comment in question was actually made on the Bill O'Reilly show by my brother Andrew.
Right.
So, and what he said was, Bill, we don't support the legalization of cannabis for recreational purposes. It was the first time Andrew had been in front of somebody like Bill O'Reilly. What he meant to say is we don't advocate for recreational cannabis because we advocate that cannabis should be used for wellness purposes. I think that the categories of recreational cannabis on one hand and medical cannabis on the other hand are a false choice. I believe that the vast majority of cannabis use is for wellness purposes. Now, I define that really broadly, right? Certainly includes things like cancer, Alzheimer's, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's, all the grave diseases that we know that cannabis can palliate or even cure. It includes things like anxiety, insomnia, depression, right? Ongoing chronic conditions that can really sap the quality of somebody's life. But it also includes things like sparking your creativity, extending your sense of patience, waking up your sense of play, enhancing the flavor of food or the sound of music or the touch of your lover's skin, or opening you to an intensity of spiritual experience that you might otherwise not be able to access. This is not about recreation. It's not about intoxication. It's about enhancing the very most precious and important parts of our lives. So I think... be able to read all about that theory of cannabis and wellness in my new book that will be coming out in September, The Cannabis Manifesto, A New Paradigm of Wellness, published by North Atlantic Books, distributed by Random House, hopefully widely available in bookstores near you.
I just want to see that it looks a lot like the Emperor Wears No Clothes. I think he's trying to channel Jack, you know, we're going to get it out there on Hentor, right?
If I can effectively channel Jack, I will be very happy with my work.
I'll sell millions of copies of this book. We just heard from Troy Dayton talking about ArcView. You're one of the co-founders of ArcView. Tell us a little bit about. I'm kind of interested in this. What I've been hearing the last couple of days here is a lot of a mixed emotions around the Green Rush. You know, it's like, let's hold it back. It's going too fast. It's not us. It's them. There's a great divide between the old and the new. You know, you're doing ArcView. You're helping new companies raise money. There's a concern about the older people in this industry getting left behind. So it's funny because this is a business conference, but there's been a lot of sort of somewhat anti-business sentiment running through the conference. Let's hold it down. Let's not let get out of control. Let's not the corporations take over and leave us behind. How do you feel about all of that, the whole Green Rush? How do you deal with it?
You know, on the one hand, I think it's a good development because nothing in the United States is mainstream until it's in the mainstream of commerce. And if we really want to change the laws and we really want to get our brothers and sisters out of jail, then we need to bring cannabis into the mainstream of commerce. We know that the way that commerce works in the United States today leaves much to be desired. We have a fabulous opportunity with the cannabis industry. It is a blank slate. Okay, if all we do with it is make money, if all that we have to show 20 or 30 years from now is big piles of treasure, then we've totally blown it. It's not about creating an industry, it's about creating a new kind of industry, an industry that spreads the wealth, an industry that creates a multitude of opportunities rather than trying to restrict opportunities, an industry that takes care of its workers, an industry that takes care of the environment, an industry that returns benefits to the communities that it's located. We can do this. We can set an example for the rest of America and the rest of the world to follow, and that's the real opportunity to face that.
Welcome back, everyone, to the International Cannabis Business Conference. We're here at the desk with Steve D'Angelo from Harborside Health Center, the ArcView Group, Steep Hill Labs, and yeah, we.
That's why you got that hat, man.
That's why I have
man.
The flat
okay,
hat,
gotcha.
You see? I forced Steve to take the hat off so he could use the headphones. I've got to get those earbuds or something. Welcome to the conference, and thanks for joining us.
That's great to be here, Russ.
You know, I'm so excited to have you here because the past week I have been ranting about the seeming lawlessness or rogue nature of the U.S. attorneys, particularly the Kettle Falls 5 case in Washington, and in your case, Harborside Health Center, Melinda Haig, still going after you, even though didn't we pass this law that said we're not going to spend any money
right,
going
like
after you guys?
What part of no funds may be spent don't these people understand?
It says
no.
Yeah.
That means that if you send a lawyer into the courtroom to make an argument, unless that lawyer's working on a volunteer basis, you are a criminal, lady.
That's right. And we have this release. You guys have just put this out. California congresspersons say DOJ action is illegal. Representative Rohrabacher was already here at this conference speaking beforehand. And who else do we have signing it? Here's the letter itself. We've got Representative Sam Farr, Representative Dana Rohrabacher, Representative Barbara Lee. So a bipartisan situation here. Tell us a little bit about this letter.
So this letter was issued late on Friday, and it says that the continued prosecution of Harborside by the DOJ is not consistent with the letter or the spirit of the law, and that DOJ has overstepped its bounds in this case. And by the way, it would apply equally to the Berkeley Patients Group case, which is almost identical to the Harborside case.
We spoke with Amanda Ryman yesterday as well about that, and of course my neck of the woods up in the Pacific Northwest, the Kettle Falls 5 case is gaining a lot of attention. People that were, five people who were all patients, less than 15 plants apiece, there's 74, so they're one plant under, and yet the U.S. attorneys want to go after them. Do you have any idea, I mean, I guess you're not a mind reader, but what's their rationale for this? Why do they think they can continue to get away with this? Just because they have been?
Well, Russ, for some of us on both sides of this thing, it's going to be a fight to the death.
Yeah.
And there's just some dyed-in-the-wool ideological drug warriors who are going to cling to that outdated ideology until they are in their graves. And that's just the way it's going to be.
Hmm. Moving forward, of course, everybody's got their eyes on California now for 2016, saying the feeling is that there's an inevitability to this. How do you feel about legalization's chances for 2016? And have you been working with some of the groups that are trying to make it happen?
I think that we will certainly put an adult use measure on the ballot in 2016. I think that we will almost certainly win that measure as long as our community remains unified. I've been talking to all of the groups that are working on the initiative and some of the groups that are working against the initiative in an effort to bring everybody into the same conversation. And we need to recognize none of us are going to get everything that we want in this initiative. There will be something in it that each one of us isn't going to like. And we're going to have to get over it, and we're going to have to unite with each other in spite of that and do the best thing that we can, the greatest good for the greatest number of people. We can't lose it this time.
I hear you. We've got another aspect of this that is near and dear. Well, I shouldn't say dear, but this is something I should ask you about, and that is the 280E situation and what's happening at the federal level to allow businesses like yours and many of the ones that are here at this conference to be able to deduct the expenses that every regular business gets to deduct. What's the latest on that?
So 280E still remains a dagger at the throat of the entire industry. It basically says that you can't take any of the normal, usual deductions that every other business in America can take, and you're taxed on your gross revenue. If the IRS strictly applied 280E in every case, it would lead to the closure of every single cannabis business in the United States of America. In fact, what it seems like they're doing is really using 280E not so much to close down cannabis businesses as to wring an extraordinarily large amount of tax revenue out of those businesses to make sure that they don't have the resources that they need to really grow and to really thrive.
thrive and possibly acquire some political power and political voice. So it is a huge problem because established cannabis companies like Harborside could be facing contingent liabilities of multi-million dollars. And now we have investors looking at the industry, and they don't really like to see millions of dollars in contingent liabilities on balance sheets.
Absolutely correct. And interesting, too, bringing up the point of there being a tendency to want to throttle our political power through attacking us for our size and our money. In fact, I believe that's what Melinda Haig said she went after you for was, well, you're so big, obviously there must be something wrong going here.
Yeah, the before Melinda came after Harborside, she'd closed down 600 other dispensaries, supposedly because they were too close to a school. And then she targeted us, and, well, we're not too close to anything, so she couldn't say that. So, you're too big.
Yeah.
Right? Well, gee, it's not like I, took a stick and beat patients over the head to get them in the door,
Right.
The reason we're big is because we do a really good job, and a lot of patients want to come to Harborside. I learned a long time ago not to expect reason or logic from the drug warriors.
There we go. Let's look at the ArcView side of things. The group recently put out a report on the profitability and the forecast of how big the marijuana market's going to be, essentially saying it's going to be the biggest growth market, bigger than organic foods in a few years. And here on the West Coast, assuming that California gets along in 2016 and gets something passed, we will have an entire region of the country, Washington, from Seattle down to San Diego, that's going to be this legal zone for marijuana, and yet they won't be able to trade between each other or move the money between each state because of the federal prohibitions.
Well, Russ, they told us that we wouldn't be able to create a medical cannabis industry in California because it was against federal law.
Yeah.
And we did that too, okay?
Yeah.
So I look forward to the first regional interstate trade compact between the states of Washington, Oregon, California, and Nevada. I believe that will happen, and it will be the first step to a true national cannabis market.
Oh, you heard it here first, folks, with Stephen D'Angelo, the Western Free Trade Marijuana Zone, Cannabis Zone, whatever we end up calling it. I think that'll be wonderful. I know you have a ton of interviews to get to. I want to thank you for joining us here on the show. And just real quick for the folks, obviously everybody should have the websites and the Twitters, but for the few who might not, tell them how they can get in touch with you and learn more.
Sure. If you'd like to get in touch with me or learn more about my work, you can go to stevedeangelo.com. or to HarborsideHealthCenter.com or on Twitter at Steve D'Angelo.
Thanks so much, Steve, for joining us and
thanks
all the work
you're
doing to make this a more free country. Appreciate it. Enjoy
the
conference.
And we'll do that.
Great time there at the International Cannabis Business Conference. There will be a medical marijuana conference coming up at the Hilton in Eugene, Oregon, March 15th and 16th. Another Sunday-Monday conference. We'll be there with the Russ Belville Show and provide damn near live coverage. You can catch the videos on YouTube as I get them uploaded. We upload them raw. You get the footage just as we tape it so we can bring it to you as quickly as possible. I'm going to take a quick break, and when we come back, Rick Steves sits down at the desk at the ICBC with me for a discussion about worldwide marijuana legalization.
To the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
You can get 420 Radio on the go with the TuneIn Radio app for all mobile platforms. Go to rad-r.us/420TuneIn or just click the TuneIn Radio icon below the live radio feed on 420radio.org.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs, and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics, Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Russ Belville Show and 420 Radio. Adam Hand of Handmade Apparel produces quality custom designs for t-shirts, hats, and other apparel. Handmade Apparel is the official design shop for 420 Radio, among many clients who rely on Adam Hand for everything from short-run custom projects to full-run clothing lines. Visit handmadeapparel.biz to browse the selection of handmade gear or to get a personal quote for your own designs. Handmade Apparel, a proud supporter of 420radio.org.
We must wage what I have called total war against public enemy number one.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
That marijuana, pot, grass, whatever you want to call it, is probably the most dangerous drug.
Some think there won't be room for them in jail. We'll make room.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Radical Rant.
All right, folks, our final bit of coverage from the ICBC. Rick Steve sat down at the desk with me to discuss the changing politics of marijuana across America and how that is affecting people in Europe and around the world. Enjoy.
Welcome back, everyone, to the International Cannabis Business Conference here in sunny San Francisco, California. And joining me here at the desk, we have Rick Steves. Rick, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Russ. Good to be with you.
So great having you here every time we get to talk to you. And it's gotten to the point, I followed you around Oregon. I've seen you at the Hemp Fest. I think I can deliver the high as a place speech at this point. But yeah. The people seem to really, really enjoy it. And tell us a little bit about your thoughts on California. I mean, you're 2-0. You've legalized every state that's legal on the West Coast, Washington, Oregon. What do you think about California 2016?
Well, I don't want to bet on any losers. Because I'm going to throw my all into Washington in 2012, into Oregon in 2014, and I completely hope to be able to come down to California and do whatever I can to help California legalize, tax, and regulate marijuana. It'll be a good year because it's a presidential year. That'll bring out more young and progressive voters and so on. And as I mentioned in my talk here, I just think it's really, really important for California to realize that pot smokers are not the voters you need to get.
Yeah.
You got to get the vast majority of our population that just thinks it's scary and we don't need another vice. And it's very easy to frame the whole legalized marijuana issue in a way that frightened people and conservative people can embrace. And that's what I want to do when I come down here. I'm hoping to contribute some money, and I'd love to spend 10 or 12 days talking in 15 or 20 cities around the state, sharing my take on the wisdom of stopping the prohibition against marijuana. But I'm really going to advocate here in California as much as I can for California to go like Colorado, Washington, and Oregon, the states that have won, and that means have a public safety law, a law that is not pro-pot but pro-civil liberties and smart law, a law that recognizes the legitimate current concerns of people who are inclined to vote no on it, mm-hmm. and to tackle those concerns and have them vote yes. And it's incremental, you know. I mean, we know that people are more frightened of marijuana than they need to be. But we have to respect their fears, and we have to deal with the concerns about children getting their hands on pot, about safety on the roads, on employers being able to defend the standards of their workplace that they want, and so on. And I really think that the major accomplishment for us, Russ, is to get beyond the fear and for people to realize, hey, this guy's not going to fall. We're not locking up people anymore for smoking pot, and we're not stoking a very important black market industry that enriches and empowers gangs and organized crime. But we're turning that huge black market, which must be one of the biggest cash crops in California, if not the biggest, into regulated and taxed legitimate industry that's going to generate a lot of good tax revenue to do important things that wouldn't be able to get done otherwise, and to take the all that money away from organized crime in the black market. I just think it's common sense. There's so many ways we can frame this, and I'm pretty confident that, assuming California has a smart law, a public safety law, a law that law enforcement and that gang may not endorse, but they won't come out against. I think that we can build on the momentum we've had from Washington, Oregon, and Colorado and Alaska, and find that California legalizes in 2016. And when that happens, it's going to be a snowball right across the whole United States of America.
You know, I'm glad you bring up the point of people's perceptions and the audience of voters that have very little knowledge or information about marijuana and the people that use it. And And I would compare it to previous cultural shifts, you know, integration in the 40s and 50s, you know, the laws changed, but people didn't really understand that black folks were just fine, normal people like everyone else until they were exposed to more black folks. Same thing with the LGBT movement, you get more exposed to people out of the closet. Do you feel that now with legalization happening in now four states, that as we move forward in the next few states, it may not have to be as conservative an issue, conservative a ballot measure? I know Washington starting off being the first one, you had to put a whole bunch of conservative things in there.
Yeah, we had to have no home grow.
Yeah.
And very strict DUI.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can Monday morning quarterback all these things, but I think it's very important to compare not the ideal law, but the status quo compared to what you can certainly pass. And then remember, once you pass it, even if it doesn't reach as far as you wanted it to reach, people will get comfortable with it, and then it will evolve further. Legislators can tweak it, you know.
And we're seeing that in Washington with the city attorney, Pete Holmes, is calling for vapor lounges, a kind of a coffee shop-ish sort of situation where people have a public use venue. And I believe one of the bills, I think Senator Ann Rivers' bill just got adopted by the Senate, and I think that one allows for some level of home grow. Maybe that was Cole Wells' bill, but it does seem
to be
evolving.
But the point is, it's just 2 years later, and all of a sudden people, you know, because I live in Washington State, and it's no different. We're just not locking up five people or arresting 5,000 people a year that we used to arrest. The state is saving all sorts of money that way. We're generating tens of millions of dollars of tax revenue, and most importantly, there's no indication that more young people are getting the pot or there's more DUIs on the road or, you know, you've got these fear factors that we have to overcome. Once you overcome those fear factors, then I think people are going to be more comfortable with home grow and lightening up on other dimensions of the discussion that we can talk about. But there's legitimate concerns about that. There's, you know, this whole thing about edibles that would be attractive to kids or people that can overdose on edibles and stuff. And if I was not a pot smoker and if I didn't know this whole industry, I'd be like, whoa, you know, slow down. And I think it's impressive to me how we have two countries, really. We have a part of our country that realizes you can legalize, tax, and regulate marijuana, and then it's suddenly not that big a deal anymore, and we can deal with it smartly. And there's other people that are very fearful of it because they just can't picture it in their community. You take the average American, and you walk them through HempFest, and they're going to just be emotionally exhausted. They're going to be so stressed out, and they just think these are a bunch of freaks. Well, they're not a bunch of freaks. They're a bunch of citizens.
Yeah.
And they're there whether you like it or not. It is a culture within our beautiful, multifaceted United States of America, and it's just very, very important to recognize people's civil liberties. And getting back to your basic question, do future states, can they be more aggressive with their bills? Different states can try, but I would not want to lose this opportunity in California.
Right.
Because you got to make it happen on a presidential election year because you need more young voters and more voters out. You gain, I don't know, I'm not a political wonk, but you probably gain 5 or 6 points in the election by going in a presidential year instead of an off year. So California has to do it in 2016 because we want to keep the momentum going. I was just talking from people from the Midwest, and they've got initiatives brewing, you know, and if California fumbles, it sets us way back. And I don't want to wait another 10 years for this.
Absolutely.
So I want a law that is going to, frankly, that's going to upset a lot of cannabis activists in California, and I want to win it. And then we'll deal with their concerns after marijuana is legal, regulated, and taxed in this great state.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a lot easier to fight to expand your rights as a citizen than to get all your rights as a criminal, right?
That's a very good point. You're
arguing, you just got to argue for the acceptance.
You know, it's a whole different environment now. In Washington, I host political events. I just had Senator Patty Murray in my living room, and I got my bong right there behind her on the shelf. It's legal. There's no question about it. It's a civil liberty.
You know,
and she's right there talking to her people, hosted by a guy who's got a bong on the shelf.
That's wonderful.
She's not necessarily in favor of it or against it. She just likes the fact that grassroots democracy is playing out here. We're doing it smart. We're doing it respecting people's legitimate concerns, and we're doing it celebrating civil liberties. That's what America's all about, and you can spin that in the most conservative of crowds. You saw us in Medford in Oregon. That's a famously conservative place.
Oh, yes.
We got to give our little presentation there, and the Medford newspaper endorsed us. That's amazing that Medford would endorse us, and all of a sudden all these hardcore reactionary types are giving it a different look.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge accomplishment. To get endorsed by the Bellingham Western Washington student newspaper, you don't need that.
No.
But to get endorsed by the Medford
Hartford City newspaper editorial board. That's very exciting. We're going to do the same thing in the more conservative parts of California, and I can hardly wait.
You know, you brought up the cultural aspect, walking an average American through Hemp Fest, they'd see a bunch of freaks. But then again, lots of cultures have lots of freaky things. I look at people that run away from bulls and throw tomatoes at each other in Spain, and I think that's a little freaky.
That's pretty freaky, you're right.
So one interesting thing that you bring to this, of course, the audience that you generate at these events is skewed much more toward the non-pot smoker crowd, somebody your mom or grandma is going to want to watch and enjoy. And as you brought this message to them, originally it was the European perspective and how forward-thinking they were moving forward on drugs, and America was prohibitionist and behind the times. Is there an aspect now where the tables have turned a bit and maybe some parts of Europe need to learn a lesson from America?
Well, that is interesting, because Europe is flying the dream team we had in Washington State to win I-502 and legalize marijuana in Washington State a few years ago. European cities are flying our people over there to help them and talk with them and go to their conventions. Pete Holmes goes over there, Alison Holcomb's going all over the world. Europe is more progressive on marijuana up until now, but they never had the patience or determination or whatever to deal with what they call the gray area.
The market.
The whole behind the scenes, the wholesaling, the distribution, the production. That was just all, don't tell me about it, and we'll just regulate and tax the retail to the consumer end of it. And now it's very easy to regulate that bit. But to deal with the whole back side of it, as the Netherlands never has, and that's what Washington and Colorado and Oregon are doing, that's complicated. And there's a lot of people that are frustrated in these leadership states because we don't get the gray area exactly right. Nobody's done it yet, and this is quite a impressive undertaking, and cut us a little slack. It's just 2 years into it, and we're doing something that no other political entity has ever done, is stand up against our government's insistence on criminalizing marijuana, and we're making it a legitimate, regulated, and taxed industry that's going to employ a lot of people and free up a lot of law enforcement to deal with more serious problems. So we'll get the gray area figured out, and I don't mind us being the ones that fall on the barbed wire so everybody can walk over us.
I remember you mentioning even the gray area in the Netherlands, where the Dutch coffee shops are only allowed to have half a kilo.
That's right. Yeah, 500 grams is maximum inventory. Yeah.
And then the mayor wanted to raise that because of the traffic.
Because you can sell a ton of marijuana, but you just can only have half 1 pound at a time in your shop. So they're having all sorts of deliveries every day. And the mayor was recognizing just the traffic congestion that was causing. So the mayor, believe it or not, in Amsterdam, was advocating to double the allowable inventory to 1 kilo, 2.2 pounds.
Wow, that's fantastic. And then final thing, just north of Washington State in Canada, Mark Emery's returned back home. Jody Emery made a run at a liberal seat that got turned down by the federal liberals. But Canada seems to have been in their George W. Bush years lately, kind of a political retrograde situation on marijuana.
I remember when I was just starting to get ramped up to this in Washington State, our Bar Association was having a convention, which was the hypothetical, once we legalize, what are we going to do as a society? I mean, this was 10 years ago. And at that time, senators from Canada were coming down very way ahead of us, very comfortable with this. And then they had this rollback, and I think a lot of it was extortion from the United States government. Mm-hmm. It's hard for a smaller economy to stand up on an ideal when the consequence for standing up for the truth of the ideal is a trade war with the United States. It's pretty tough to sell to your people. So they don't want to risk that, and they rolled back marijuana. For standing up.
It's amazing. Folks, he's Rick Steele.
And they rolled back marijuana. That's my understanding of it. And they've got a pretty a vigorous cannabis community up there that wants to stand up for their civil liberties. And right now they're looking at us and being emboldened by what we're doing just south of the border.
It's amazing. Folks, he's Rick Steves, at Rick Steves on Twitter, ricksteves.com on the internet, Rick Steves Europe on television, Europe Through the Back Door in the books. Anything else that I forgot to mention?
Facebook. Oh, no, what people can do is they can go on YouTube and find my talk. I had a lot of fun giving this talk here in San Francisco. And basically, if you just Google Rick Steves and marijuana, you can find my different talks that I give, and maybe you can enjoy some of these ideas that way.
It's great stuff. Tell your grandma to watch this stuff. She'll love it.
That's my specialty.
Thanks so much, Rick. Appreciate you coming by.
Okay, happy travels.
Once again, another chance to sit down with Rick Steves. He's always been so gracious to me over my years working with Normal and now independently. Always quick to give an interview. Really, really appreciate it.
That's all the time we got for Hour 1, but stay tuned for Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio. We'll take your calls at 971-533-7111. And we got a bunch of things to discuss that we've collected from over the week. Politico has outed Debbie Wasserman Schultz as trying to quid pro quo her way back into the hearts of medical marijuana supporters in Florida after 58% of them showed up at the polls. We'll tell you how that's going. Plus, a look at Ann Lee in Texas, Jane Fonda, and other folks of advanced age. Until next time, take care of each other, Tokers.
The Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it.